Random Ad Tech Podcast, news of the week in ad tech and marketing tech brought to you by ExchangeWire.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. We've got a very special edition of this week's podcast coming hot off the heels of the election over in the US. So I'd like to introduce our special guest for today's session, Jason Kint. Jason is CEO of DCN, or Digital Content Next. Jason, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to be on.
Not at all. It's a delight. Perhaps we can get kicked off. What we're going to do today on the podcast is talk about the impact of the outcome of the US election on the marketing and advertising industry. But just to provide a little bit of context, tell us a little bit about DCN and what you do in the industry that's going to kind of, you know, inform some of your opinions in this session.
Yeah, absolutely. So DCN is a trade association mostly based in the US that works exclusively on behalf of premium publishers and content companies. And so we were relaunched about a decade ago with the mission to advance the future of trusted content. And so what you should know is that all of our members, and they range from what would classically be called as newspapers, magazines, television companies, native digital companies, have been brought together to be entirely focused on the future of our industry, whether it be advertising, consumer revenues. That's our mission. And so we do everything from like very deep research and benchmarking to best practice sessions to public policy and advocacy work. And we're often known for the last piece of that, particularly around a lot of the antitrust enforcement and privacy developments that played out over the last decade.
Yeah, great. Okay, well, that is definitely going to help us get into some of the stuff we want to talk about today. And I'd also add to that, you know, you've got a strong publishing background in the industry as well, don't you, Jason, having worked for some big publishers and broadcasters before in the past?
That's right. I was a native digital person myself back in early 90s with the first web browser and built and ran websites and major digital media properties, including the last 8 years at CBS Sports and, you know, and all of their efforts in streaming live events, et cetera. So I saw a lot over those two decades. And in this role, I've been working to try to put that to good use to kind of figure out the future for news and entertainment.
Yeah. Okay. Fantastic. All right. Well, let's jump in. So the votes are in. And Donald Trump is going to be the 47th president of the USA after beating Kamala Harris. It's only been, not even 48 hours, right? And we've been having lots of conversations in the Exchange Wire offices about what this potentially means for the industry. So I'm interested to hear your perspective. There's obviously many different touch points with respect to, say, government legislation and what's happening in marketing and advertising at the moment. But perhaps we could just get started, Jason, with you giving us an overview of what you think, you know, a Trump victory and Republican control of the House and Senate is broadly going to mean for media and ad tech. And then we can get into a bit more detail from there.
Sure. It is still early. I think a lot of people here haven't probably even slept yet. So, but I can kind of lay out, you know, two sides of almost all of these discussions at this point and in the calculus that we're going to be playing. You know, broadly speaking, to stay at the high level, I think it's important to note, too, that although the attention's all on Trump beating Kamala Harris, the victories in the Senate and the expected victory in the House that will be known clearly in the next week or so are also really important. So it was a trifecta. And so that will help him and help the administration with their agenda, which is, yeah, you know, been very, you know, clearly at times laid out in terms of you know, some of the concerns around both tech and, you know, and some of the emerging developments around AI and also media at large. And so so we can get into it, but the fact that he's got all, you know, the support of Congress too, to an extent. You know, I think one other thing that may be a part of the discussion and need to be a part of the discussion is the way Trump won and kind of the populist underpinnings and kind of a repeat of that piece, you know, a lot of support from the, you know, the average everyday American, a lot of support from those without college education and blue collar, et cetera. So that piece in terms of the agenda and doing, you know, what will serve that base is also a big piece of this.
Yeah. And I mean, you raised some really important points there, that this is a very different Trump victory to the first one in terms of the amount of control the Republican Party is going to have over the sort of legislative process over there in the US, which is, you know, which is the thing that that I think is really going to impact many things, including the world of marketing and advertising. So let's get into that in a little bit more detail. I think probably what lots of people in the industry will be wondering about first and foremost is probably, you know, two things in parallel. The first will be, will a Trump administration's approach to things like anti-competition, et cetera, have an impact more generally on perhaps M&A activity in the industry? Because we're imagining that, you know, fiddling about is the way that I could characterize it with anti-competition legislation might make certain circumstances more favorable for investments and for acquisitions. It's obviously going to have a knock-on impact elsewhere. And then in parallel with that, everyone's going to be wondering what might or might not happen with the current antitrust case, anti-competition cases against Google, and what impact that might have on the industry. So give us your 2 cents worth on both of those.
Yeah, I mean, I think traditionally you would believe that antitrust enforcement would weaken, soften, we'd have a little bit of a return back towards where things were. I do always want to remind everyone, and this is kind of where we have to play both sides of the coin, that the current antitrust cases, whether they be the FTC case to break up Meta, or which is, by the way, just got through motions to dismiss, the Trump case that we have a decision on, the search case, which is now in remedies, and whether or not they want to break them up, those cases were all brought by the Trump administration and in 2020. And so I think it's unclear. There's been softening of the relationships that you've seen, and you often see during a campaign, whether it be with, and Bezos, I should throw in there too, because Jeff Bezos, because Amazon's being sued by the FTC. Mm. Zuckerberg complimented Trump after the attempted assassination and kind of floated his ego a little bit. Like, they're all congratulating him. But it really matters who's going to be running the actual antitrust division of the Justice Department. And Trump has been strong on antitrust in the past and concerned about unwieldy large tech power. And J.D. Vance, who will be vice president, also has not only been strong in antitrust enforcement, but he's been complimentary of Lina Khan and the head of, so the head of the FTC. I think they're all gone, and it's going to be a different team in town, but I wouldn't assume that all disappears as it relates to tech. As it relates to general mergers and acquisitions, the narrative in the press coverage already is that those deals and discussions have already started, right? And the stock market showed that, I think, yesterday. And so I think it'll be probably a lot easier to get deals done for sure. Going forward. But I don't know if you're one of the major tech platforms, you should totally be feeling like you're free to get back to regular business.
Yeah, it is interesting, isn't it, though? Because like you say, some of this litigation was brought forward by the Trump administration initially. But I do feel like, well, I suppose one of the things that you could characterize Trump's approach to politics by is unpredictability, right? And I do feel like the narrative maybe has changed a little bit. And let's not forget, he's also got Elon Musk in his pocket, who will be really keen to get his $45 billion bonus or whatever, which may not have been such a smooth path for him if there was a different president in place. I mean, obviously, we're getting into the world of predictions now, but, you know, whilst he's been, you know, you're right, that's my recollection of events as well. He had been before in the past quite strong about tech dominance and, anti-competition and not creating a fair marketplace. But I wonder if his current allegiances might make him see that differently.
I mean, that was the campaign. And so it's a matter of what promises are there and how that affects the go forward. And I think that's the thing we don't know right now.
Yeah.
The key leaders in Congress, whether it be Lindsey Graham who will be heading up judiciary likely, or Ted Cruz, who will be heading up commerce. They were, and Mike Lee, I should mention too, like they're all allies of his and they've been very supportive of him, but they're also strong on antitrust enforcement. And the last time I testified before the Senate regarding market power antitrust issues was Ted Cruz. And it was specifically about Google. So, you know, I guess that there's a difference between a campaign and then once they've got the power, and I'm very interested too in how they play that out with the big tech companies.
Yeah. Which brings us on to the next point that I wanted to talk about, which is you sort of alluded to it as well in your opener, in your sort of opening summary there, which is it's worth us reflecting on how we've got to this point and how the Republicans won this election so convincingly. So just for a moment, let's talk a little bit about the impact of social media platforms here in terms of, you know, elections, this particular election, elections in general, and what might be, you know, again, the Trump administration's approach to freedom of speech, information and disinformation on social media platforms. Again, this feels like a much more murky and complex picture now, especially with his special relationship with Elon Musk now being the owner of X. Row back to the first administration, actually, if we think about it looking through these eyes, it was a much simpler landscape, right? There wasn't the same intricacies involved in terms of media ownership, social media platform ownership, etc. So what, I suppose, again, a two-pronged question there. What direction do you think the government's going to take concerning social media platforms, freedom of speech, categorization of how those platforms deal with information? And then secondly, what do you think the impact on some of that will be for publishers and content providers in the industry? Do you see that there might be a landscape for significant change, or are we going to see things sort of just unfold incrementally? I ask that second question specifically because I was at the IAB Tech Lab Summit in London this morning, and I'd heard Tony Katzer say this once before, but that if you think about what sort of information appears on social media platforms these days, one could argue that publishers are kind of competing for attention with social media platforms like for like. So I'm just interested in your views on what that means for the world of publishers and content providers, and then specifically where you think the government might go there.
And I mentioned that comment about competing for attention. Is that within the platform itself, is he saying, or as a separate entity?
As a separate entity.
Oh, so interesting.
Competing for consumers' attention.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right. And I think, you know, this is where, you know, DCN lives, and our purpose too is to make sure we're shaping the future and what that looks like, and that our publishers understand it. And I think where I would probably clarify a little bit, if I was in the room with I think you said it was Anthony over at IAB Tech, publishers also have to be able to live within those platforms, right? And compete for attention on those platforms themselves. And they're, because that's where the eyeballs are. That's where the young people are. And so whether it's TikTok or Instagram or pick your platform, what is the role of the publisher brand on that platform? You know, they're not really so much competing for attention with their own app and their news website or entertainment website so much as they're also competing on those platforms. And those platforms, you know, I don't see significant change happening. I think they've, you know, we've seen this the last 3 or 4 years. They've really pulled back on anything that was around integrity of content or labeling content or amplifying brands really understanding that brands were always proxies for trust and understanding that like that brand and where it comes from matters, the content. And, you know, and there was some movement there and then it's all been kind of, removed. And, you know, and I think, you know, Musk, I don't think is nearly as significant with Twitter and X in this regard in terms of the amount of attention that it actually gets versus what we give it in the press. But, you know, the changes that Twitter made with the labels and, you know, and the blue checks and what gets amplified on the site, on the platform, you know, those are kind of a good example of it, right? Like they, like literally, you know, if you post a link to a news story on Twitter, it's suppressed. It doesn't get as much attention as something that doesn't have a link in it. So like, he's kind of fighting against the actual open web in that way, or the platform is. And so, I, you know, if you if it's about First Amendment and letting the platforms, you know, have as much speech as possible, regardless of that speech, then, you know, it should be pretty hands off, and the platform should be continuing to do what they're doing, probably to keep him from, you know, keep the administration from attacking them more. So censorship is going to be the biggest concern always. And so we'll see, but they've got a lot of other things on their agenda. So
they certainly do, but I suppose it's just that, you know, there was a lot of sort of, debate around, you know, particular legislative amendments, you know, associated with freedom of speech. And again, I feel like it's another issue that Trump has kind of played almost both sides of that coin. So it'll be just interesting to see which way the cards will fall.
Yeah. I mean, but I think one thing I do want to make clear is, I mean, the First Amendment, you know, protects those platforms from the government. So, so as much as freedom of speech gets thrown around, you know, the First Amendment's what allows those platforms to do what they want to do. And that's already played out. It will play out, you know, in the courts in different ways. But I think they're going to be mindful of that too. So liability for what's on the platform, you know, CDA 230 and you know, what gives them a waiver on some of the liability, that could resurface again in a big way. But
yeah. And I think there's already been predictions of that, right? Because Trump was a vocal critic of that particular section of the legislation.
That's right.
If that did come back to light again, do you see that having sort of more of an active influence on how social media platforms are behaving? Or do you think, again, it will be something that's very much sort of legislative control, platforms will just keep sort of, I don't know, I suppose, growing and emerging in the way that they are? Because you could argue that social media platforms really are focused on consumer engagement. So they're only ever really relevant and valid whilst consumers are engaging with them. And it feels like that's moving at a much faster pace than any of these government controls and legislative debates are.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, no, I think, you know, the idea of liability, like similar to what we saw play out now in the EU with Digital Services Act, that's a big threat and concern if you're in the business of user generated content, let's just call it, of letting anybody post anything in real time. And so I think that they'll be mindful of that. And, you know, that might be their biggest focus area, is making sure that they don't have changes to that liability waiver.
Yeah. Moving on a little bit, but again, related, what do you think, you know, I was reading also some news accounts of reactions to the election result in other parts of the world, a bit of nervousness over in Asia, not feeling as though Trump is a terribly, big supporter of international relations there, although, again, has somewhat of a reputation for having flip-flopped a bit over some issues, but it's keenly expected that various sanctions will be put in place to certainly suppress some of the imports from Asia into the US and try to give preference to US companies abroad, etc. And I guess China's the country that's probably going to be mostly, in the firing line there. Do you think anything like a banning of TikTok could come back up the agenda, or you think the moment's passed for that?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, the TikTok is, you know, it's, there's a clock on that. Sorry for the awful pun I just probably gave, but there's a clock on that to ban it, and it has to be divested by a certain date. And so what happens to that clock is a different question. On one hand, I mean, TikTok's a perfect example. We just don't know yet at this point, because on one hand, one of the Trump campaign's biggest, one of the bigger donors, is a major TikTok investor. And that's been, it was an early donor. So like very early supporter, way before we, you know, knew that Musk was all in on Trump. And so, how does that affect things at the same time on the other side, you know, TikTok is, the concerns around TikTok are very much around national security in China, and some of the leaders in Congress feel very strongly about it. So that are his allies. So I don't know at this point. I think TikTok would be a very interesting one to watch for sure.
Yeah. Also too, because I just sort of think, again, you know, if you're following the sort of, if you're following the patterns of consumers, it's so widely used, particularly amongst a certain demographic. I can't imagine a world where a government actually has enough control to turn it off overnight. Of course, this happened in Indonesia at least 12 months ago, maybe 18 months ago. They banned TikTok, and then very quickly after TikTok made some concessions, met them somewhere in terms of concessions, some of which was financial compensation, then it sort of came back up again. That's the sort of thing that you can imagine perhaps happening in some Asian countries, but I can't imagine it happening in Western countries, right?
Right, especially the U.S. You feel like it's more likely they'd figure out a way to divest or do a deal to keep it alive. But I guess that's just one where, again, I'd emphasize the difference between campaigning versus running the government. And, you know, it's quite possible that because Trump did switch his view on TikTok from, you know, it should be banned to I don't think it should be banned. And that was after Biden had come out and said, Joe Biden had come out as president and said that it needed to be banned. And so, you know, having a different position than the current administration probably was useful to his campaigning. And it's certainly a more populist viewpoint to say, you know, I'm going to protect TikTok or keep the government from banning it. And so, you know, he might have decided that that was a good move strategically during the campaigning. Now, what happens now that they have all aspects of the government is a different question.
And it's also, you know, I think that's another good point is not only, you know, do they have arguably greater control of the government during this term, once he actually, is instated as president, than during his first presidency. But there is also a very big difference between campaigning and what you actually do in government. It's not always just about having control of things. So many other influences are at play. And I wonder, second time round, are we going to see someone who is a little more, well, there's two possibilities, either a little more experienced and understands that there'll be others in his team and in his trusted advisors that will take control of things and he's willing to cede control of those things to them. Or also, will we see what we saw arguably here in the UK during Boris Johnson's prime ministership, that there's fairly low level of interest? You know, it's important to have the job for some sense of power and control, but actually once you get into the job, not so interested, let's just hand it over to the operational people who actually know what they're doing.
I'm pausing on that last part of they know what they're doing.
I know, because many of them really know what they're doing, right?
But to the point of getting more done, however, you know, whatever his mandate is and he wants to get done, I think there probably is a better recognition that's, you know, he's going to have to delegate and rely on his team. He can't do it all himself. And so, you know, that would be a rational approach to what times a very irrational person in government. So that said, let me add one other thing that might not be on the radar of everyone, that, you know, America's messy, complicated, our institutions are intentionally in many ways put up against each other, both local, state, federal, and the branches of our government. And I think it's also important to remind everyone, I mean, Trump did actually, I believe, have, my memory serves right, he had all sides of Congress his first 2 years when he was in office in 2016 and the 2018. And Biden did also his first 2 years. And so what also matters is the mix of those branches. And the House, you know, likely will be like a 5 or 6 vote difference. And so as much as we focus on Democrats and Republicans, there still are some moderates in the Republican Party, and getting stuff passed will still mean having to do deals and to back off and get, you know, on a lot of anything they want to get through. And we haven't had a lot of things get through for that reason in a Democratic administration. And so the same holds true. And the Senate also, I mean, to get it through the Senate with, you know, definitely still, you know, double digit numbers of fairly moderate people, I think it's going to be challenging. So,
yeah. Okay. That brings me on to another question that I wanted to ask, which is around concerning privacy legislation, which is, of course, of critical importance to the world of marketing and advertising. What kind of line do you think the Trump administration is going to be playing here? Arguably the things that we've already talked about feed into it, or certainly fed into it before in the past. You know, that TikTok sort of hubris around wanting to ban them was somewhat about wanting to protect, you know, the data and privacy of American citizens and not wanting to have that in the hands potentially of external foreign agencies. What, and also alluding to something else that you, sorry, connected to something else that you just mentioned as well, which is that the US isn't, you know, a sort of a homogenous, unified entity we're talking about. And we're talking about a federal state government system. You know, I'm Australian. I grew up in one of those, much, much smaller than the US, but I get it, you know, that the top person's not always in control and states have got an awful lot of power and control. So we already know that privacy legislation in the US has unfolded accordingly, right? Been passed in some states and been very popular in some states and not in others. What do you think is going to happen from here? Again, are we going to see some major changes, or are we going to see, are we going to see states where privacy legislation was already underway and unfolding? Is it going to continue to unfold in that way?
I mean, if I'm trying to avoid predictions because it's so unpredictable at this point, but yeah. If you held me down and said, here are, you know, what are a couple areas where we actually could see movement on legislation that relates to our industry and advertising. You know, I think privacy legislation, finally seeing movement there as on federal bill that would get rid of the messiness and the patchwork of state legislation is much more likely now, because the main holdup, they were close. And the main holdup was not wanting to undermine, you know, some really smart, strong state bills that were out there, that especially California, that had a lot of votes behind it. And so preemption was a big issue. And then private parties being able to go after them. And so those, you know, the power has swung there. And so getting something through, I think, is more doable for sure. And then the other one that I'll probably keep an eye on is the America Act, which was a very bipartisan bill. I think, you know, had, you know, everybody from Ted Cruz, Senator, very, very conservative parts of our Republican Party, all the way to the Democrat side too, and Senator Warren, et cetera, but is legislation around market power in the advertising marketplace. And that also, that's Senator Lee's bill. And I think that could get some light and movement, particularly with the Google matters. So, because we still don't really know how they'll play out Google. So yeah. Those are the two I'd be watching. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Super interesting. So this is a bit more of an outside question related to the world of marketing and advertising technology, but you know, obviously we've seen some positive reactions in the stock market over the last 24, 36, not quite 48 hours. And we also know that, you know, Trump campaigned on wanting to do more to encourage cryptocurrency, blockchain technologies, et cetera. So we're going to see a return to whenever it was now. It feels like it was, you know, a century ago, but I think it was probably around COVID and just before, and maybe a little bit just after, this kind of focus on the use of blockchain in advertising and marketing. I know that on the technology side of advertising and marketing, we've moved on enormously in that time and we're obsessed with AI. But I don't know, are we going to see a bit of a return to focus on, I know, you know, because perhaps this we might see more innovation in the field of blockchain and crypto with the crypto markets rebounding.
Yeah. No, I would think so. You know, trying to predict those markets, is, you know, not something I would ever try to do. And frankly, it's part of the reason that, you know, that the regulatory oversight part has been important. But that said, you know, from a practical standpoint, you know, the folks that gave a bear hug to the Trump campaign, you know, down the list, you know, including certainly at the, you know, Musk and Mark Andreessen, you know, Mark Andreessen gave Trump a huge bear hug on behalf of Andreessen Horowitz. Like they are crypto, you know, leaning into crypto and I think they're going to be able to see, you know, a lot of the friction that they were concerned about go away, right? The SEC and the various agencies that had oversight or were concerns for them a completely different rodeo going forward. And so, I would expect that there's going to be a lot of unlocked, you know, momentum there, for better or for worse.
Yeah. And I think that's the interesting point, right? For better or for worse, it's a bit difficult to tell, obviously, at this stage. But I guess being in the marketing and advertising tech industry, you get the benefit of seeing a lot of tech innovation unfold. And, you know, some of the tech tools and solutions that we've seen in our lifetime of working in ad tech are both brilliant and potentially, you know, unnerving at the same time. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens next. We've just about run out of time, Jason, but maybe some final thoughts from you on the election results, impact perhaps for some of the organisations that you do a lot of work with. What can we expect next, and what would you be, you know, what will you be looking ahead to, whether it's positive or otherwise?
Yeah, I mean, I think once we get past the next couple months and we start to have a better idea of who Trump's going to surround himself with. We got a lot of speculation right now, and who's going to be in the key leadership positions at Congress, including this, you know, the leader of the Senate, which is, I mean, likely to be, I think, Senator Thune, but we'll see. You know, once we get past that, I think we'll have a better idea. But the, you know, figuring out what are the, you know, the two or three industry issues that are actually going to have some promise and moving. And as I mentioned, the, you know, the ad tech ecosystem and the power, market power there that really affects everybody else. And the America Act is a good example, I think is something I'll be watching out for. We'll be watching out for, and who our allies are in that discussion.
Yeah.
You know, weirdly, I mean, most of the, if you ask about our peers, most of the trade associations take a lot of money from big tech companies. Right. And so we're very unique in that we don't take any money from them. So how they play this will be very interesting, because if I were a member of any of those groups, you know, IAB has whatever, 1,000 or so members, there's got to be 500 or 600 of them that would be doing better if something like the America Act was out there that actually made it so that if you're over $10 billion, you shouldn't be able to be on both sides of the market. It's in the ad tech, you know, that's if you're doing more than $10 billion of business, that's what it says. So like, you know, I can make that case for why everybody would be better off if we didn't have Google on all sides of the marketplace. And I think the, you know, that's being made in the courts right now. And so how those organizations play this will be very interesting, because I don't think being beholden to three or four tech companies at the top is not a good long-term strategy for associations.
It's not good business for anyone, I don't think. And, you know, we've been watching everything unfold with the current court case underway against Google in the US with interest over here on the other side of the pond. And I think it's going to be there for a really interesting sort of, you know, next 6 to 12 months as we see this transition in government, understand what the impact's going to be. And, you know, yeah.
Yeah. The one, I guess one thing I add too, because is the transatlantic piece of that, because everybody is watching these cases. I mean, the US enforcement learned from UK's investigations, Australia's investigations, what EU did with Google. We learned a lot about the failure of behavioral remedies. And so the, you know, I do believe the tech companies will try to make this about protecting US companies from, you know, EU regulation that's gone too far, et cetera. And I think as much as the broader industry recognizes that the movements in the EU and the movements in the UK and the movements in the US have actually are good. They're good for the rest of the market. That's important too.
Well, and also I think it's happening at an important time, right? It's not like we're talking about the very early days of privacy legislation and the impact that that has on the marketplace. It's been in place, you know, GDPR has been in place for a long time now, and we're starting to, you know, we've really been able to do some serious testing and developing of new tools and solutions to still make advertising and marketing work. Plus, you've also got consumer expectations, which have changed massively over that time. So I think there is a bit of a weight of momentum behind this on the basis of exactly what you've just said there, Jason, that everyone's watching and stuff's happening elsewhere, but also just on the back of the fact that I think, you know, everyone's got different expectations now. So Fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us, and especially sharing with us some of your candid thoughts so early on in the post-election phase. It'll be really interesting to reflect back on this conversation again in maybe another 3 or 4 months' time, and we'd love to have you on again to talk more.
I'm certain it will be. Thank you very much. I appreciate the interest.
No worries. And that was this week's MadTech Podcast.